Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Hey, it's Neil from Happy Selling, and a quick note before the episode starts. Alongside hosting this show, I also sales coach SDRs, account executives, CSMs, and founders, especially those without enablement support or looking for that external voice. See it as sales therapy. Coaching with me is 100% confidential, recorded, and bookable on demand via Zoom. Sessions start at £150 sterling with no long-term commitment. If you're curious, just email me at neil@happyselling.io and I'll send you the details. All right, let's get into today's episode. Hello, listeners, watchers, fans, and subscribers of the SDR Disco Call Show. What is this show all about? So we live in the world of sales and predominantly in the world of tech sales. So think startups, tech companies, and all of that stuff. And there's a function within that called sales. And the thing that I'm most a fan of is sales development. And this is a function which reaches out to prospects to book meetings and to books in some pipeline. And I'd like you to do me a favor. If you're listening to this on a platform like YouTube, what I'd love for you to do is go down and click like. And I'd like you to do a share or a comment, because what you're telling the platform is that this is good content. And this is what I like to do in exchange of sharing out this information. So all I'm asking is just go down and hit that. And equally, if you're listening to this in your local podcast platform on Spotify or Apple or wherever you get this in the world, please do the same. But with this guest today, I'm super excited to have him on board for a number of reasons, right? So number one is this person reached out to me a few weeks ago asking if their founder of their company could come on my show. And I was like, hell yeah. So we got that in the bag. So thank you very much for that. But secondly, this person has an interesting career path, because we talk about people coming into sales, but this person had come into sales, but they went elsewhere. And we're going to find out more about that in a short moment. But guest, without further ado, could you please introduce yourself? Who are you? What do you do? And where do you work?
Hi, everybody. Neil, thank you so much for having me on. I was not expecting to be then reverse pitched and say, hey, can you hop on? But hi, everyone. My name is Mia Casaglow. I work over at Hyperbound. I help run marketing over here. And yeah, thanks again for having me on. I'm so excited.
Woo! And we're super excited to have you on this chapter. You are such a character and I love your energy. So Mia, for our audience that is across the globe and listening in different places, whereabouts in the world are you based?
I am based out in San Francisco. I actually just moved here a couple months ago so I can be in the Hyperbound office, and it's amazing. I love it.
Love it. So out in San Fran in Cali in the US. Love that. Been there a few times. One of my favorite places in Silicon Valley as well. And obviously with the audience, if they don't know, at a super high level, what does Hyperbound do, Mia?
Yeah, so Hyperbound is a AI sales roleplay and coaching tool. So for all of you salespeople out there who hate practice and, you know, hate doing your role plays and think enablement isn't quite helping you out, Hyperbound is a tool that would help you get those reps in so that when you hop on the calls and do your cold calls and your whatever, like I was terrified to do as an SDR, which is why I'm not doing it anymore. It helps you build some confidence with that, which is confidence is key in sales, as we all know.
I love that. Thank you for sharing. And again, I'll be putting some information in the show notes about Hyperbound, and I can vouch. I have tested and played with it. It's hella scary and hella cool. And I can see the value out there for a lot of salespeople, such as myself, as somebody who still does it, right? But also what we like to ask our guest Mia is, outside of sales and outside of the world of tech, like, what does Mia like to get up to? What are your passions, hobbies, and interests?
I feel like my natural instinct is to go down the route of all my grandma activities, which is I have a cat. I love to read. I knit and crochet. I like to be in bed by 9 p.m. I'm an old lady at heart, but also something I've recently started. I've been a basketball player my whole life. And after college, I kind of stopped playing. And I recently in SF have gotten into a rec basketball league. And so it's really exciting. It's fun to like build up those skills again and get back into it. So that's been a big excitement in my life the past like week or so and for the next couple months.
I love that. I love that. And how does it feel to be back on the court?
It's amazing. It's definitely really scary. And I was super nervous. It's a co-ed league. And so I'm playing against a lot of different kinds of people. But I may or may not have dropped 20 points in my first game last week. So
there we go.
It's like riding a bike.
I love that. She shoots and she scores. I love that. Thank you for sharing. Thank you. So what we like to do at this point of the show is we like to go to our guest's LinkedIn profile. And with all of our guests that come onto this show, you'll be able to find the LinkedIn URL within the show notes, also on YouTube and in the podcast show notes. So if you want to connect with them, pick their brains on any of the topics that we've discussed today. As we can see with Mia, she's got an awesome LinkedIn profile and she also posts a hell of a lot of cool content. And I'd highly recommend giving her a follow because, again, we're going to get into this, but going to the other side, she can give us salespeople a lot of good perspective as somebody that has worked in sales, but now is on the dark side. But we'll come to the dark side in a moment. But you've had a lot of cool experiences. So obviously, if we go way back in the day, a sales associate at Dollar General, you know, you've been an intern at Outreach.io, super cool company. You've done the SDR gig and life. You've worked at companies such as Amada. And obviously, for the last year and a bit, you've been the founding, yes, and I say that again, founding marketing lead down at Hyperbound. So Mia, in your own words and in your own story, take us from the beginning as to how did you get to where you are today?
Oh, yeah. Okay. The beginning. I feel like where's the beginning at? From a super young age, I feel like I've been slightly conditioned to believe that sales was for me. I am related. My dad is a big guy in the tech sales world. A lot of people know him. And from a young age, I've been told you are just like Mark. You are just like your dad. And so I became conditioned to believe that like anything he did was something that I wanted to do. And so from a young age, I was like, I'm going into tech sales, which like kind of what kind of like 8-year old is like, I want to go into tech sales. Who says that? But I did. And so I've always been kind of conditioned to believe that sales is something I wanted to do. I was lucky enough to go to a school that I could get a degree in sales and marketing. And I also think, so that's an interesting piece of lore. Yeah. But I feel like a sales degree is not something you see very often. It's becoming more of a thing now. But I definitely, when I was in college, still under this brainwash that sales was what I wanted to do. So I didn't really pay much attention in my marketing classes and was just really focused on my sales classes. And then I got an internship at Outreach, where I was an SDR intern and crushed it. And so then after that, I got offered a job after college. And that's when like my real SDR pipeline started. I moved out to Seattle after college and started being an SDR there. And that's kind of where the journey began.
I love that. I love that. And there's so many things I'd like to unpack with your permission, like as we go through that journey. So as you said at the beginning, you were kind of conditioned because dad was a big player in tech sales. Yeah. And at age 8, you're saying like, yeah, that's what I'm going to go do, right? I think if I went back to age 8, I was wanting to be a fireman, a radio presenter.
Wow, you're doing it.
Yeah. I'm kind of doing it, right? But as you know, like what did you see within family as to what tech and life was? Because for somebody in the UK where we're not based in Silicon Valley, we weren't exposed to that life. So what did tech mean to you at a young age?
Yeah, I feel like I grew up in Pennsylvania, which rural Pennsylvania. And so I also feel like I was exposed to this tech world where most of the people that I grew up with weren't. And so I feel really lucky and blessed. And I think I was just able to see how much joy it brought my dad to be given an opportunity to work in tech sales. And there's so many people out there that will claim I love my job. And for a while, I kind of was like, you have to be joking me. Like, no one loves to work. No one loves their job. But I got to see my dad go into work every single day, excited to solve problems and excited to sell and excited to help other people sell. And so I feel like there was this dream world made of what tech sales was. And so I think that had me really excited because I was like, I want to love my job and what I do as much as he does, because we work so much of the day that if you don't love what you do, that's awful. That's really not great, which also explains why I jumped from sales to marketing. But, you know, there's this love for work that I've always really strived for and that I've seen from a young age, which I don't know if many people get to see that. And so it set a really good example for me for like what this world of tech sales and what go-to-market could look like.
I love that. And we will definitely get into crossing into the dark side. I want to hold off on that because there's so many other
The dark side, Neil.
Come back. But the other bit, which was really interesting, is you said like when you were like studying, you were studying like sales and marketing as like a qualification. So admittedly, here in the UK and EMEA, or I know within EMEA, like you've got Valeric Business School, but in the UK, we don't have that. You can study marketing, you can study business and marketing, but you can't really study sales. And, you know, over the past 4 or 5 years, I've always thought to myself, wouldn't it be cool to get a qualification within sales? It'd be great to see this more in education, right? Because to be honest with you, like I was studying IT when I was in college. But if there was this element of sales or how to do sales, not just how to run a business, finance, operations and all that stuff, but actually sales methodologies and frameworks and all of that sort of stuff. And I kind of learned, I kind of said when I got into tech, I had my mini MBA when I worked for a company in Silicon Valley. That's where I got all that good stuff from for. But what was it like studying sales and where you're saying that you weren't paying too much attention to the marketing classes, but more the sales? Like what was a sales class like?
Boy, I took several sales classes. There weren't a ton because, you know, this concept of like having a degree in sales, I think is very new. But I actually took like a CRM class where we got Salesforce certifications, which
No way!
Like in the middle of nowhere, Pennsylvania, like it's very random. Cool. So we were doing that. I took like a B2B specific marketing class, which I feel like is very interesting. But my sales class specifically is we learned a lot about like how to read body language. We learned things that, you know, I don't think are necessarily super relevant, like dinner etiquette, you know, if you're, you know, which, you know, some people think that's really important. I tend to err on the side of like, it just exists as a human and don't be gross and you'll be okay. But we did learn what is proper and what is not. But we learned how to, like, if someone is coming across this way in a call, how do you navigate that? I actually was the president of a co-ed sales fraternity in college where we
This is so cool. Sorry, I'm geeking out, but go on, please keep going.
We competed in sales competitions where we would do, we'd do role plays. And so basically we would prep for these competitions and it would be like we were doing an in-person discovery call. And so we'd run disco, we would pitch our product, we would secure next steps, we'd build rapport at the beginning. I feel like it was a very textbook approach to sales, but I would rather take a textbook approach to sales than no approach to sales in college. It was, I don't know, it was very interesting. I forget about it a lot of the time, but the competitions they were stressful. They were a lot, but I think the pressure is very relatable to like what pressure people experience in sales. And that was very clearly communicated. So,
wow. Again, with all that experience, like, I would have loved to have gone there. Like your boy got kicked out of college twice, never went to university. I went into work because I think what you were learning there, I'm geeking out as a sales trainer, like you're doing discovery calls, next steps, role plays. Like, hey, Neil, maybe if this doesn't work out, I could go into enablement for schools and anyway, side quest. But like from my point of view, like the things that I've learned in sales or, you know, trainings and everything from others or when in companies, for me, that was teaching me life skills. So like, as you said, communication and etiquette, because truth be told, when I went out to my first tech company, I had no idea about dinner etiquette. I didn't know, like when my colleague from Cali said, yeah, we're double fisting. And I'm like,
you said, sorry?
What? He said, yeah, here's the drinks with double fisting. I was like, oh, right. You okay. Said,
right, of course. Yeah.
You know, but, you know, how to like speak to colleagues, like body language, learning body language as well. Those are like the arts of communication. Like, yeah, I'm jealous. I'm not going to lie.
They got pretty specific too. They're like, if you see this kind of decor in the back of somebody's Zoom, what can you maybe assume about this person? Or what can you assume about the way that they like to intake information and the way they like to be spoken to? It kind of got pretty granular, which is, yeah.
I find it super interesting because I can understand the context or thought process behind that and the logic. And I'm curious, like, what does my background kind of like tell about me? Maybe I don't want to know. But that's really cool. So you're learning all those sort of things, right? And then, as you said, you got to get your internship, outreach.io. And for people out there that don't know, it's a sales engagement platform, very similar to SalesLoft. And I'm not going to name drop any stuff like that and cause fights here on the podcast because they're all cool. But when you went into that internship, so you basically had a lot of great theory as well as some practicing of stuff that you see in that world. And now you're coming into an organization on an internship level to see that happening in reality. What was that experience like?
Even my interview process for this was, I think, very rare and kind of, I had to work pretty hard for it. For context, my dad may or may not have been the VP of sales at Outreach at the time that I was trying to get this internship. So some doors were opened, but I felt very inclined to, I had a chip on my shoulder and knew that like I needed to prove that like me being here was because of what I've done and not because of someone opening a door for me. I do think you should take advantage of the people that you know and those relationships that you've worked hard to create, but you have to, at the end of the day, prove that you deserved the intro, you deserved the door to be opened and you worked for it. But it's really funny because I got told no at first from the internship.
Really?
They made us take a sales test where it asks you questions about what motivates you. I can't even remember all of the like categories of the...
Like a psychometric test?
Kind of. That was kind of put in place to test, would you be a good salesperson? And I failed it.
Yeah.
Which maybe is some subtle foreshadowing. But at the time, I was like, this is my calling. Like, I need to get this internship. And this means a lot to me. And so naturally, as someone who was applying for an SDR job, I put on my SDR hat and figured out who was in charge of the interns, who played a role in go-to-market, and I emailed them and I said, I bombed your test, but why should a test dictate whether or not I'm a good salesperson? Let me speak my truth to you before you let a test make a judgment about me. And so, like, why would a multiple choice test dictate whether or not I will be a good seller? That's really, in my opinion, really silly. And so I got an email back and they seemed impressed. And so I did my interviews and ended up being an intern at Outreach. And it was really great. And I think that was a big lesson moment for me that even if I wasn't interviewing for a sales role necessarily, I would have done the same thing. And so I think like having the grit of an SDR is something that like everyone has in every role, but I definitely had to work for it. And it was very upsetting getting told no. But you brush it off and you move on to sales. And so, yeah, that was an automatic, very interesting start for me.
I love that. And again, so many elements and like layers to that, Mia. Like the first one that I'm hearing is obviously, again, dad may or may not have had a helping hand. But from what I understand, that young Mia looking up to dad and thinking, that's where I want to go, that's what I want to do, but not wanting to be in their shadow. When you come in, you want to do this on Mia's merits, right? You want to do this on your hard work. And I think, you know, again, I can share a similar story as to, so here's a funny thing. When I did my first sales job, I got that role without any experience. I just knew the product and I went to the sales director, pitched myself saying, I just want to get into sales. I left that company many years on. I then went off to tech startups, became really successful, became a leader, did all of that stuff. And at one point in my career, I thought about coming back to that job. And you got to understand that Neil had at least 5 to 6 years of tech, SaaS, industry knowledge and experience. And when a role was given to me, like for full transparency, it was because it was closer to home. I wouldn't have to travel anymore. I just had a kid and I'd become a father. So my mind was in a different place. I couldn't travel into the city anymore. So maybe let's go back to that job. So it's kind of like you've gone to university, but you're now coming back to college with the same brain. That's the way I looked at it. But they made me do one of those multiple choice questions and they told me that I failed and I just didn't have the DNA of a salesperson. So I think what we call it in the UK is an OMG assessment. It's a sales assessment. And I kind of looked at the test. I was like, screw that, man. I know what the hell I'm doing. I can do it.
Right.
Don't need your job. And they tried to really, I would say, what's the word? I'm looking, offend me with the offer of job that they gave me, saying that rather than paying me what I'm worth, they went really down. And I was like, not happening. So I went back to tech and all of that. But yeah, a test doesn't define you, neither does a multiple choice. Because again, it's you, the human, the creative side, the way you're speaking, the way that you put yourself forward, and it's the way that you sell yourself can also play a very big part in that. But I loved how you said, and you were honest, that when you got told no, you're like, okay, that hurts, but I'm going to do something about it.
Yeah.
And I'm going to contact people. And in essence, what you did was you acted like a salesperson. You were hit with the objection for no on the deal. And you came back and you resold the deal yourself. And then you got in. Is that right?
Yeah, that's totally right. It helped that in doing so, it further proved that the test was wrong and that I would be a great seller.
Mm.
Luckily, I had to put on an SDR hat to prove that I would be a good SDR. It works perfectly in my favor. And so, yeah, being told no doesn't feel good. It sucks, but it's what you do with it or what you do after it. And classic sales jargon, like every no gets you closer to a yes, which is so silly, but it's so true. And so getting told no, I was like, I'm not okay with this. And so I bucked up and figured it out.
You did indeed. And what I'd love to do is just go back to your LinkedIn profile, like this stint that you had within outreach. I think you've got some impressive stats. So let's just see again for our listeners and watchers if you want to go into our YouTube channel to watch this, you can watch this in 4K. But if we go down to Mia's profile, so we can see here, you know, started my sales career as one of the most renowned sales shops in the tech industry. Hell yeah. Set a record for most sales accepted leads gained in the first month in work of hours, quote one, actual five. Averaged 110% quota post ramp. Improved MBR from 2%. Happened during my 4 month. I love how you're detailing this. Because a lot of people, when they come in for job interviews, the thing that I see that works against them is they just say what they did as their day to day, not what did they achieve. Because as a former hiring manager, I would be looking as to what cool stuff did you achieve there that I can then transfer into this company. So I love how you did it. Consistently hit exceeded your daily KPIs, work closely impaired with ACE to target key accounts, learn more. But you've got a perfect profile. Like I would have hired you, like just seeing this, right? But this is obviously all the stats and stuff and what you achieved. And again, congratulations for that. But tell me, what was that life, the actual experience like for you, Mia?
Yeah, I am someone who really appreciates and loves structure. And boy, did the outreach sales org give me structure. My day looked like getting into the office at 7 a.m. and hitting the phones at 7:30 a.m., which most of the time I'm barely awake at 7:30 a.m. I had to get used to that really quick. But outreach provided me a lot of structure that I think led me to be a really successful SDR. And so I was really grateful for that. I also may or may not have had like a great sales coach that was a phone call away at all times. But I think in being an SDR, I learned a lot of really valuable skills and I got really good at it. Granted, in my profile, it does say I hit a 2% MBR, which is trash. That's quite bad. So there's an interesting story there of like how I got it up and what that looked like for me. But I think the biggest realization I had there and at my next company is, you know, you can be good at something, but that doesn't necessarily mean that that's what you enjoy doing or what you're meant to do. And I think that's a really big thing. I'm someone who I hate to lose more than I love to win. I am obscenely competitive. I am grotesquely competitive. I hate to lose more than I love to win. And so when I was losing in sales, I was like, heck no, like missing quota, I don't do that. I don't lose like that. And so No, we don't lose around here. And so I think it wasn't a love for sales that pushed me to be good at sales. It was a love for winning and a hatred for losing. But it wasn't, I didn't love being in sales, which is why I started to wiggle my way into marketing. But I'm very grateful for outreach, and I learned a lot, and I was a really freaking good seller. And so there's a lot to take away from that, I think.
Hell to the yeah. And the thing that you're exuberating right now is this element of confidence, right? And this grit, this want, this hunger, which is, you know, a really great trait to have within sales or whatever profession career that you have, right? But from my own experience, that stuff doesn't always come naturally. And there are some times where you do get those L's and it does hit you hard. So I'm curious to know, like, what did it take? Because, all right, let me give you an example. Some people say to me, Neil, you sound really confident or you're really good at this. And I always say to them, everything you see now, once I was a complete opposite.
Yeah.
And it's been a hella journey to get to that point. And I'm curious to know, like, how did Mia build this confidence? How did you build this hunger? And what did you do when shit didn't go right?
At outreach, you know, you ramp for like 3 months and then you are like, have fun. You're in the deep end now. And I did really well while I was ramping. But usually once you are at like, oh, I have, there's this like weird thing that happens where you build confidence through ramping, which, you know, ramping is typically a little more attainable to do because, you know, whatever. And so you build this confidence while you ramp. And then you're like, oh, I got this. Sales is easy. Being an SDR is easy. And then what I experienced and what a lot of my SDR friends experienced was like an oh shit moment of, wait, this is way harder. And all this easy stuff that I experienced when I was ramping, that's not necessarily the like dirty reality of sales. And so you hit this dip, especially like as you're ramping, they give you like the best inbound leads. You're like, I'm the shit. Like, I'm so good at sales. It's because you're getting inbound leads that are like, I would love to book a demo and I'm super qualified. It's like, yeah, okay, of course I'm going to book that meeting. But you have this like moment of, this is way harder than I expected. And I think that's like a make or break moment for people. And for me, this is a moment where like things were not going my way. I crushed my ramp quota. I was feeling really confident because of that. Confidence is key in sales. And so it's good that they build this confidence. But there was definitely like a moment that I was like, I don't know if I can do this. And this is not what my first 3 months made me feel like. And this is when I hit my 2% MBR. And I had a one-on-one with my manager, who I love very much. I'm going to shout out Jake Bradley till the day that I die, because he is the greatest manager I've ever had. And he's a great salesperson and a great person in general. But he looked me in my eyes and he's like, if you don't get this up, you are not going to hit quota. Like, something needs to happen right now or else you will not make it. And my competitive spirit came out and I was like, I can't lose and I need to do this. And so I reviewed a bunch of calls with him. I spent like 3 or 4 hours on a Saturday listening to calls with my dad and came to the very quick realization that the more AE level discovery I did on a cold call, the worse that I did, the less meetings that I booked.
Yeah.
This is something that I will preach and preach and preach to SDRs till I die. We were required at outreach to get a certain number of hit certain letters in MedPick in order to consider it qualified in order to book a disco call. And I went knee deep in that and was asking questions that I had no business asking as an SDR. We're listening to my calls and my dad is like, dude, why are you being an AE? Your job is an SDR. Your job is to book meetings. Make sure the meeting's qualified, but then like move on. And after I made that adjustment of like, I'm going to get the information I need to make sure this meeting is not a waste of time, and then I'm getting out of there, I started crushing quota again and I had one of the highest MBRs on the team. And so it's just like, that was a moment for me of like, I need to dig my heels in, uncover what the problem is, and then quickly fix it or else I will not make it as a seller. And I think that was honestly like from salesperson to salesperson, SDR to SDR, I think that would be my biggest like aha moment is like, do not go crazy on the disco if your job is to book meetings. Make sure it's qualified and have good conversations and ask questions. But once you know what you need to know, book the meeting and move on to the next.
Wow. Mia, there are so many like fireworks going off in my head within that journey. So, you know, building that grit within yourself, like you've got this winner, I want this winner mentality, but also that element of hitting that rock bottom and the shit hit the fan. And then coming to what I love you coming to the manager, having that discussion with them. The key thing that I wanted to put out here is sometimes I don't see this with everyone that I work with is you're willing to put the work in to figure out how this stuff is supposed to work, right? Some people may hit that reality of after coming out of ramp of, oh shit, this is real life. I've got to do this. I've got to roll up my sleeves. And I say to a lot of people, like, you know, there are different companies. You've got startups, scale-ups, and like IPO on the way there. And on the other end of the spectrum, everything's process driven, everything's defined and done. Scale ups, it gets a bit more serious, you know, things a bit more rigid. We've got some cool people. But in startup land, you've really got to put your sleeves up, and it's not for everyone, right? But you could either run from the problem and just say, do you know what, this isn't for me, let's drop this. And I've seen that with people, and it's cool if it's not for you. But if you're willing to put in a fight for it because this is what you want, you genuinely did the work there, and it's so heartwarming to hear. And to give your manager the flowers, I think people should be giving more flowers to the people that have helped them, just saying FYI.
But he deserves it. He's literally the greatest. Yeah.
I love that. And then like with your element of, you know, the discovery call, don't spend too much time on it. I can agree with it. And there are other parts that I can think with it as well, because I agree. All right, let me put it to you in this way. Like with a cold call, the mistake that I see some people making is they treat the cold call like a full-blown discovery call.
Yes.
Like with a cold call, you're just trying to figure out, do they have the pain? Are they willing to talk about the pain further? Then move it to the discovery call. But let me put it to you this way. I went into a tech company once as a manager, and I came in to fix a broken outbound engine. Mm-hmm. And what I realized was a lot of the SDRs that were hired were not, well, they were missold a dream as to what an SDR was, because they didn't really have any benchmark as to what it was. And what I kept finding was these SDRs were doing these, booking these meetings with these people for their AEs. And they sat there, said, hi, so this is Mia, the AE. They're going to do the demo today, or they're going to do the discovery. And they would just sit there. And they'd sit there for 30 minutes. And then at the end of the meeting, I'd watch the gong calls back. And they said, all right, well, thanks. And thanks for meeting Mia and I'm the SDR person. And they'd come off and I'd be like, why were you on the call? And they're like, oh, because I booked the meeting. And I was like, okay, I get that. But what did you do? And they're like, I did the intro. And I said, then what? They're like, well, I just needed to make sure. And I said, are you sitting there because you just want to make sure this qualifies and you get paid? Or are you doing something within that meeting? And then I said, okay, but what value are you adding? And it's not to like make them feel shit or anything, but I'm just like, what's the point of you being there? Like you could have been booking another meeting and doing more calls and stuff like that. But then some of them said that, you know, I want to be an AE one day and watch and do those calls. I said, okay, cool. So my biggest bugbear with VPs of sales was Mia that they didn't want SDRs doing discovery. And they said their job was just to book meetings. And I said, but are they not the ones that are going to be your future AEs? They're like, yeah. I said, so where are they going to learn? So with my SDRs, we implemented that they did do discovery calls, but they were at 15 minutes. So imagine I do the cold call, I book you in, and now we're in the 15-minute discovery. The goal of that call was to help you figure out if we're a fit for your business, right? And I do have a couple of questions. But I would say I've done some research on LinkedIn. This is how your headcount. These are the sales tools that I see that you have. I see that you're leading this project. Could you walk me through what's the process? And what I was trying to get from them was understanding how do they work today? So if we're doing MedPick or Spiced or whatever it is, just understand their situation. Figure out their pains at a high level. Right, I don't have to go too deep into it. And then what I would typically do at the end of the discovery is share a customer story of somebody that looked like them, the results that they've achieved, and get them hyped so that they actually want to see the demo. And what we found was conversion was much better because the SDR had an opportunity to properly qualify, then give the AE a great hot shit lead to then put over. But I agree with you, you don't want to go too deep or go into the weeds or get too technical or ask the economic buyer, the decision maker, like all of that sort of stuff. If you can get it, great. But then, you know, you need to leave something for your AE to do, right? So agreed, like not going too deep in it, but there is like some, you know, warrant in wanting to do discovery as well. But then obviously we had outreach. We went elsewhere. We went on to another company, right? So we went to Armada. So tell me, what's the story with Armada?
Yeah, so I was at outreach. And I was doing really well when the VP of sales at Outreach, I think that was his title, introed me to someone who was actually looking to hire a founding SDR at the company he was at. I think there was just, I think at Outreach, at least with the people that I interacted with, there was a level of like, I want what's best for you, even if that might not be here.
Here, yeah.
And so I got that experience and I got referred over to this other person who was a founding go-to-market member over at Armada. And so I had a couple conversations, and I think that the biggest selling point for me was I had figured out how to do the operational SDR thing. I had it down to a T at Outreach. I felt very confident. I knew this is my talk track. These are the hours that I come in. This is the operational rhythm of this company. It was very laid out for me. And I think I was missing this opportunity to build something or be able to contribute more strategically to what was going on. And as a founding BDR, that's kind of exactly what you're meant to do, is how, what is the strategy for attacking this? It's not, here's this sequence, use it. It's what should the sequence be? What messaging is hitting? You know, what territory should we go after? So there's a bit more strategy with Armada that I didn't get with Outreach. And I needed that experience. Also, it was a startup. I think there were less than 40 people when I started working there. And so it was also just a very different size company selling into a very different type of ICP. And I think I had just gotten a bit complacent at Outreach and kind of felt like I knew what I was doing and was ready for something new, which is what took me over to Armada. And ultimately, that's why I said yes. And
love it. And it's like you learned the blueprints with an Outreach, right? You knew what it meant to be the SDR and BDR. And then being a founding BDR, it's an exciting journey because you're literally building things from the ground up, right? And as you said, it's not, here's the pre-built sequences that we have, and we're just going to go to market and just see how many of these we can get. It's you're building that go-to-market strategy. And I've been that a few times, and I've helped build those in companies. And that's the space that I actually prefer to be in throughout most of my sales career. I love being in that startup environment because it's scrappy. We don't know what the hell's going to happen, but it's interesting to see what happens, right? But again, I'm getting this sense of you need this challenge. You need something that aligns with you not getting bored or just feeling like you're just sitting there being another cog in the machine. You have to feel, and correct me if I'm wrong, that you're making a difference and an impact. Would I be right in saying that?
Yeah, I would definitely say that. And with such a small team, like if you're not making a difference, you're probably not going to be working there for much longer. There's no hiding. And so I think I was looking to be challenged in a role that I felt really confident in. And like you said, like I learned what was good at Outreach. I knew what it meant to be a good SDR, and I had developed really good habits as an SDR. And so it's like, what better way to put that to the test than to be the only one doing it, and also like setting up the system for future people to do it. So I definitely wanted a challenge for sure. And it was a challenge.
I love that. I love that. And again, just looking at your LinkedIn, like on the sell, like actually, no, I need to come back and share this because this is, it makes me really happy. And I'm going to give a reason why in a moment. And I'd highly recommend with all of our listeners and watchers, please go visit Mia's LinkedIn profile. It's in the show notes. It's everything there. But as we can see, founding SDR there, but sales and marketing development lead. But in sales, generate over 50 million pipe, book meetings international with known companies, develop sequences and practices for future SDRs. Love that, because you're creating the playbooks for the people that come after you. That's the cool thing about being a founding SDR. Converted 30 inbound leads of Tottenham hitting outbound SAL targets. Awesome. But then you come into what you do for marketing, right? Hosted a dinner in Sao Paulo with 95 attendants, converted over 1 million pipeline through marketing leads follow-up. You are just like a founder's dream, Mia. Like, I'm not gonna lie. This is like, as a former manager, I was like, this was the woman that I was looking for. Like, I needed this. And the reason that I say that is it's because of you. It seems like you have this entrepreneurial spirit, right? You have this thing of you've been in the valley. You've seen what works well in the valley. You know you've got that DNA within you. So the reason that I want to bring this back in as to why I'm sharing this is for any SDRs that are thinking about either jumping ship or, you know, thinking about breaking into tech. So if we just, you know, I'm just going to toot my own horn a little bit. If we go down into my profile, similar to yourself, what I would do in all the roles is tip in what I actually did within that company, what I helped build. So I did that, you know, co-creation of documentation for sales enablement, playbooks, what I did for the team, how I helped with that and all of that. Because when a hiring manager or a company is looking at you, they're looking at you not as just somebody to come do the job, but you're an asset that they're bringing in. And they want to see what assets you have. So my point in your LinkedIn profile is don't just put you do cold calling, you do cold emailing, do what did you build? What did you attain? What did you get? Because it's a performance-based role. But similarly, as you're going into marketing as well, that is also a performance-driven role as to the metrics and the MQLs and things that you do in campaigns, webinars, conversions, and all of this sort of stuff. And now we're nearing to, I don't know if you want to say going to the light side or to the coming away from the dark side, but I'm going to preface this by saying when I speak to SDRs as a coach or as a manager or as a trainer, I've always said to them, as an SDR, you wear four hats. Hat number one is you're a marketeer. You're evangelizing the word of your company, their product information by sharing content through emails, collaterals, webinars, and getting that demand gen in. You're being a marketeer, right? You're getting the word out there. Number two, you're a salesperson convincing people to have a meeting with your business. Third, you're a product expert over time because they ask you technical questions, you go find out from the team, you come back and respond, and you're acting as a CSM because you have to nurture that lead to then bring it back up when they are ready to buy. And I always used to say to them, explore those four hats over 12 months and ask yourself which one brings you the most joy and energy. And this might sound counterintuitive, but sales and hitting numbers and targets was great at first, but it didn't excite me. It still doesn't today. I've more loved the content creation, the getting the word out there, doing the event, doing a podcast, creating clips. I've always had that side to me as well that I've liked. And I've also sometimes even thought about maybe I should make the jump and just go into marketing. And I've worked with some super cool marketeers and CMOs, and I've learned so much. Like my first ever CEO, Teen, who is this CEO at Zora, he was Salesforce's first CMO. He was employee number 11. So he knew about go-to-market and the message and all of that. Mm-hmm. Now that I've prefaced this with, in other words, I love marketing and I think it's a really cool place to go into. Talk us through that journey of you making the shift.
Yeah, I think it was at Armada that I started to realize, like, just because you're good at something does not mean that it's enjoyable and it's something that you love to do. In full transparency, I had a really hard time at Armada for a multitude of reasons. I just was really struggling in this founding BDR role. And I think I just started to realize, like, when this is good, how much joy is it bringing me? And when this is bad, how much joy is this bringing me? Both weren't great. Like, even when I was hitting quota and doing well, there was always this voice in the back of my head that was like, it was a hoax. You're not that good. There's like this level of imposter syndrome with sales that happens all the time because you're constantly starting over. Every month you start over. And I think there was this mental battle that I had kind of figured out at Outreach that crumbled when I went to Armada. And it made me really like sit and analyze where I was at and what I wanted. I kind of thought through like, what are things outside of work that bring me joy? And are there pieces of that that I'm getting in my job? Because I also agree with the statement that like you shouldn't make your passion and your hobby a job, because I think you lose kind of the ultimate joy that like a fun hobby brings you, and it's a hobby for a reason. But it's like, how can I take my favorite pieces of my hobbies and, you know, put them into work? And what does that look like? And am I getting any of that? And the answer was no. And I just went through a couple months of not being that happy. And I think I started to analyze, like, where can I put these little hobby speckles that will leak into my job? And I realized that was in marketing. I would consider myself a pretty creative person outside of work. And I wasn't allowed to exercise those creative juices at work with sales, which I'm sure there are people who have figured it out, but I wasn't interested in figuring it out at this point. I was mentally pretty tapped out. But that's when I started tapping into marketing projects at Armada, because it was such a small team. And another person I have to shout out is Stephen Farnsworth. He was a person that I worked with over at Armada, and he's great. And he was very influential to me. And he was like, I know what it's like to work at such a small company. Like, dabble in everything that you can while you're here, if you have the time for it. If there's a path that you want to go down that maybe isn't sales, we want to nurture that and we want to give you the space to explore those things. And I don't think that's something that a lot of people are willing to let their employees do. So shout out, Steven. You're also amazing and great. He gave me the space. And when I came to him and I was like, I am nervous to tell you this, but I don't think I'm happy with sales. He was like, what can we do to get you happy? And where can we pivot you so that you are happy? And that's when I started tagging in on marketing projects. I started really small and just like was helping write blogs and was helping coordinate events and do stuff like that. And I was like, why? I allocated a couple hours a week to doing marketing stuff because at the end of the day, I was still carrying a sales quota and couldn't neglect that and didn't want to neglect what I had been brought on to do. And so I was like, why are the like few hours a week I'm spending on marketing consuming all of my thoughts when I'm doing sales? Like all I'm thinking about is, what's the next marketing thing I could do? Could I tag in on this? What if I got this sales thing done really fast so that I can go back to what I was doing with marketing? And I think that was like my aha moment of like, girl, you don't like sales and marketing is really fun. And all of these like fun things that you do outside of work and that bring you joy, you can morph into a marketing role, and it can allow you to exercise those muscles that you aren't getting to exercise in sales. And I think that was like the biggest moment for me, was like, I love doing the 2 hours of marketing work that I'm doing a week more than I love any second of the sales work that I'm doing.
I love it. Thank you for being so honest. And you've really opened a chapter that I don't think we've ever spoken about on this show. And hopefully for our audience, it's showing you another avenue. But the things I love about you that you've done there, Mia, is you did a good amount of self-reflection, asking yourself, is this for me, right? Asking what's bringing you that energy, what's really draining that energy, and being able to step back. Because I give an example. I've been coaching somebody a few weeks ago where they really want to be into sales, and they're doing all the trainings, they're doing all the coaching, and it's still not clicking. Sometimes they're not successful in the roles and they're moving from one place to the other. And it's been going on for a long time. And I kind of felt that, I was like, I asked them the honest question. I said, is this for you? Like, I've never said to anyone, like, you can't do sales. I never say you have to be born for, I don't believe that. You can learn anything you want. But I felt this person was pushing themselves so to be perfect and get everything right, that that was their kind of downfall. And I just said to them, let's forget sales for a moment. Let's forget all of your bills. Let's say all of your bills are paid and you don't have to worry about nothing. If you could do something else, what would that thing be? And they were kind of stumped. And I said, like, what about, so what we found is they loved helping people. So I said, what about teaching, you know, community-based stuff? Like, let's just say we can park sales for like another year or 6 months. We can always come back to it. But I think you're draining your energy trying to be perfect in this thing where you can actually go flourish in something else and then come back to it if you want. But I love how you were reflecting and asking yourself those hard questions. Because again, we have our ego and we have what we think we should be doing, but being honest with ourselves as to, should we really be doing this? That's a hard conversation to have. And I think the other beautiful thing is you taking the courage and saying to them, I don't know if this is for me. And I think that takes a lot of strength to do. And I've done it once or twice in my life. And it takes a lot of cojones to do that, especially when you're hoping things are going good. But I think the beautiful thing that you had with your leadership is, what can we do to get you happy? You know, where can we pivot to? Because I've had that thing where, you know, I've gone through a rep and we've gone to that unfortunate thing called a pip. And I would say to them, I don't want to put you through this.
Yeah.
But I'm going to have to, because it's either going to end in two paths. One, we finally get back on track, we know where we're at, and we know we're doing this. Or we get to the end of it and you realize, I'll still get you on track, but you may come to the realization of, this isn't for you.
Right.
And I would be happy either way. But if we do get to that track of, this isn't for you, let me help you by getting into another department, or let me be a great reference for your next company or role. And I've met a lot of SDRs, and hopefully they still listen and watch to this, that are no longer SDRs, but they've gone into marketing, they've gone into CS. They've gone into founding their own business or something like that. But I think you have to go through that path and let go of the, it has to be perfect in this because everybody else is doing it.
Right.
You have to do it right. But also where Mia is also finding that joy in those 2 hours per week in those projects of doing marketing things. Truth be told, like somebody asked me the other day, like, if you weren't doing this, sorry, like sales, coaching and training, what would you do? I said, I'd be podcasting all day, bro. I'd be making music and doing music videos. I'd be creating clips and reels. And, you know, somebody DM'd me on Instagram on my profile at happyselling.io, FYI, follow us. And they said, hey, you create some really cool content. And the question was, do you plan all your content or do you do it ad hoc? And I responded to them. And I said, everything you're seeing was planned a month ago and scheduled a month ago. And yes, I do ad hoc in between for anything that comes through. And they said, that's really impressive. And they went on to say, we help coaches create content so they don't have to worry about the content creation. And I said, not for me. I said, I actually enjoy creating the clips. I enjoy doing the editing. I love putting the aesthetics. And this is stuff I've learned from marketeers. And I think, oh, let me try and do that and create that. I enjoy this stuff too much to outsource it, to my own detriment, because it is hella busy and it does stress me out sometimes. Finding that joy, that's where I can, if I've had a hard week of sales coaching and talking to a lot of salespeople, zoning out for a couple of hours on Canva or on an editing tool or going on to CapCut, I can zone out for hours and just have fun with that. I don't know, what about you?
I'm the same way. And I think this was like a big moment for me of like why I was like, I need to be more creative at work because that's what brings me joy is I'm the same. Like, I love doing stupid little things on Instagram and like the way I like to collage and I'm a very crafty person and I like when I give people things, they're usually handmade. And it's like things like that, like matter to me, and outletting my creativity in that kind of way is something that brings me so much joy outside of work. And with marketing, like I get to zone out and do Canva for hours some days. And like that is something I would do even if I wasn't working. I would zone out and do Canva for hours on certain days. And I think like finding ways that you can mix the things that you like to do with what you actually have to do to be paid and make a living. Those are important things. And that's actually like something I mentioned in my interview at Hyperbound. They're like, you have no marketing experience. How do you know this is what you want to do? And I said the same thing. Like I make stupid collages on Instagram and I do this. And I like to, if you look at my LinkedIn, it's very genuine to who I am and my voice, and writing and making those videos and doing that kind of stuff brings me a lot of joy. And I would happily sit down for hours and do that in my own free time. So once you find something that you would enjoy doing, even if you weren't doing it for work, that's like, I think when you find like the sweet spot. And this myth of like, oh, I love my job, it doesn't become a myth, it becomes real. And now I'm one of those people probably where people look at me and they're like, you say you like, no one loves their job, girl. Like, you're saying you love your job, but there's no way that's true. And I'm like, it is, it's real. You'll find it one day. I promise.
100%. And I think I agree with you on the loving your job bit, but the phrase that's going through my head nowadays, it's not so much as my job as I love my craft. Right? I love my craft of creating things. Yes. I love, like, for me as a musician, as a rapper, I love putting a song together, coming up with the lyrics and practicing, putting it out. When I'm sales coaching and I'm doing a sales ring, I love putting the presentation, holding the crowd and performing in front of them. It's my craft. Because like me and my mum was having a call today and she said she needs some help with something. And I said to her, like, I've spoken to like 60 people this week. And I'm really tired, mum, so I can't come and do this. Like, I'm really tired. She said, but that's your job. And I said, this isn't my job. This is my career. These are things that I love doing, but I still do get tired with it, right?
Right.
But coming on to, like, as we're coming towards the end of this chapter and this beautiful episode, and there's so many things, I think we might have to get a part two at some point. So for my audience and in transparency, Samia SDR'd me in terms of, like, getting Hyperbound associated with the SDR Disco Call show. And I loved her approach. I loved her reaching out to me. And when I received the DM, I was like, I saw checking out my profile, saw the connection, saw the DM, and I was like, this is SDR 101. I like this. But then I looked at her profile and I see marketing. I was like, wait a minute. Is she a market? I didn't know. But I'd love to know, like, you've been at Hyperbound for a year. You're the only marketing lead there and you're the only female lead there. But I want to talk on those points. What's the story with Hyperbound? How did that come about? What has it been like? And then tell me, what is it like being in there today?
Yeah. So my journey to Hyperbound it didn't start fabulously. I actually, in full transparency, got laid off at Armada. And so I got laid off, decided to move closer to home I was in Seattle at the time, decided to move back to Pennsylvania closer to home. And I was in this weird transitional period of like, I'm physically moving, but I'm also like mentally moving. This like idea of who I thought I was going to be in terms of my career completely shifted. And so I was going through this big transitional period and I was like, I want to get into marketing, but like, how do I do this? I have no experience. And I, again, put on my SDR hat and was like, let's reach out to people and let's use the connections that I have to reach out to people. And how do I get in touch with as many marketers as possible? And the goal of my conversations with them was not to like beg and plead for a job. Like, that wasn't the mentality or people say you can smell the stink of desperation. And like, that's not what I was trying to give off to people. But I was like, how many genuine conversations can I have with marketers from so many different companies, so many different types of marketers, so many different types of personalities? Like, how do I speak as many people as possible and just like pick their brain about like, what do you love about marketing? What do you hate? What is specific to what you do? And just have genuine connections with people. And so I did that as much as possible and eventually got in touch with Josh Norris, who now, as of 2 months ago, is also a full-time at Hyperbound. And so I'm not solo marketer anymore, which is amazing. A shout out, Josh. We're a great little team over here, strong but very, very mighty. And he was advising for Hyperbound at the time. And I got in touch with him. We had one phone call conversation and he was like, I might have something in mind for you. And so I was like, okay. And he told me about Hyperbound and about Cyan Uthel. And after Armada, I was honestly very hesitant to work at a startup. I wasn't sure where I stood on that front. It didn't go well for me last time. And I chalked it up to it was a startup, so I hated it. And so I was very hesitant to do that again. But I hopped on a Zoom call with Cyan Uthel and Josh, and we just hit it off immediately. And I was very fortunate that they were looking for someone who didn't have a ton of habits in marketing, because they weren't trying to do what everyone else was doing. You could bring someone in that had years and years and years of experience, but they're going to run the same playbook that they ran 10 years ago. And like, that is just not the nature of marketing. And so I was very fortunate that they wanted to bring someone in who would give fresh perspective. I was able to, you know, manipulate the things that I learned as an SDR that would prove that I would be a good marketer. And a couple weeks ago, so I was like, I want to be on podcasts. And I said, watch me cook. Let me cook. Let me cook. I'm putting on my SDR hat and I'm going to outbound all these podcasters that you want to get in touch with. And as an SDR, because I was an SDR, I am a good marketer and I can outbound and I can do these things. And so there's such a clear connect between, I think this SDR to marketer pipeline is so, it's a really powerful one, because all of the really great things you learn as an SDR and being in sales are so applicable to marketing and help you be a really solid marketer. And so I was lucky enough that I sold the dream to them and they bought it. And now here we are a year later.
That the like my audience, the hairs on my arm are standing. Like Mia, like you, like within this episode, you've created like what I call the playbook for the career of SDR to marketing. And it is definitely a path I would encourage a lot of people to explore. But you've also given in game as to how you've done it. And also what I love is, as you've attributed it, the things that you've learned as an SDR is what's benefiting you now. Like, you know, I've been a founder for what, 6, 7, coming up to 8 years now. I'm still an SDR, right? Stuff that I do when I book meetings, when I'm having conversations, follow-ups, like when we had our conversations, yes, I was a salesperson, but also was a marketeer selling you how this, but like Mia booked me, peeps. She booked me. And like what she's talking about, like it's verified and it's certified that it works. And I just loved your approach. And that's the thing with like, lots of people can outbound, they can message, they can do all these sort of things, but it's the vibe that you bring in that communication and the vibe from you from day one, like to toot your horn, has been on point. You know, after we did our podcast with Cy, I was just like, I need to get Mia on, right? Because she's such a cool person and you've got a lot of talent in there. And yeah, it's amazing to see it in action. And like a salute to you. Like, I've really enjoyed this chapter here today. So thank you so much for coming on board.
I have to throw it right back at you, right back at you. When we hopped on our intro call with Cy, I was like, this dude knows his shit and he's so fun to talk to and he brings great energy. So when you were like, can you come on the podcast? I was like, this is just going to be a homie chat for the next hour. Like, this is going to be great. And it has been. And I think you need to be shouted out as well, because you bring such great energy to conversations. And that's something that I admire and want to replicate with people I speak to. So props to you.
I love that, Mia. Thank you so, so, so much. That's made me really smile and blush and really happy. But it's cool to hear. And it's just the vibe thing, right? It's people, like going back to this sales thing of where people say people buy from people, but people buy from people that understand them. If you can get on the vibe, if you can get on the communication, if you can share those passions and interests and hobbies. Like I was reading something from a guy called Vin, who's a communication expert. And he said, if you struggle at work to connect with people because you don't have things in common, He said, that's not the end of the world. If you find out people's story or ask them what their story is, like what's their passions, what's their interests, what did they like to get up to, or how did they get to that, that's how you can bring communication and connection with people. Yeah. So again, very interested in your story. I feel that we've built a really cool connection here today. You have been precedent in setting and educating our audience as to how you get this shit done. So like, salute to you on that one. And, you know, if we were to go back, and a question I love to ask all of my guests is, if you could go back to that young Mia, maybe, I wouldn't say maybe as young as 8 years old when thinking like, I want to do what dad does, but like kind of when you were studying those classes of sales and marketing, what three bits of advice would you give to that Mia who's just about to embark on this journey that you did?
I would say the first one that comes to mind is pay more attention in your marketing classes and maybe take some graphic design, you know, advertising, you know, start paying attention to marketing a little bit sooner. You might have saved yourself a little bit of time. But also like trust your gut. Like I don't regret starting my career in sales. I don't regret it for a second. I have learned so much by doing it and also made some of my best relationships through working at outreach and friends that I'll have for life. And so like, you know, stay the course. Like I don't regret doing anything. So trust your gut. But that also comes in, trust your gut that when you feel like something isn't right, make a switch. And so those are two. What is one other one? I would say like just continue to like really embrace your authenticity. I think something that makes me a powerful marketer and something that makes you a powerful marketer, Neil, or just a person is that like I feel like there's such like a genuine energy that comes from you. And I like this is an energy that I'm very intentional about putting off as well. And I think it's very easy to try to stifle it to fit into some kind of corporate mold or to be more professional or to come off in a certain way. And that's just not the game that I play. And so I would tell myself from years ago to stick with that and like stay really authentic to me because she's cool. You're a cool dude from 3 years ago. You become really cool in 3 years. So like stick with it.
I love that. I love that so much. And I can definitely tell why you might be a force to be reckoned with on the b-ball court, like this energy that you have. Like Mia, I freaking love it, man.
It amplifies, I fear.
No, like let it amplify. Let it be you. Like you said, to be authentic is to be comfortable in your own skin and who you are. And sometimes you have to go through a lot of different layers and experiences in life to finally get it. I would say, look, I've hit 40, right? But I feel I'm the most confident and comfortable person in who the hell I am.
Yeah.
And if people don't like that, that's their problem, not mine.
Yes.
But as long as you are true to yourself, that's where you kind of find happiness, right? That's where you will grow with it. But yeah, hopefully maybe in 3 years time, we can come back and watch this episode and you can look at this version of yourself and remember this message that you're sending to yourself. Like, do it. I love it. But a massive shout out to all of our listeners and watchers today. So as a reminder, if you're watching this on YouTube, to help us out by liking this video, by sharing it, by commenting, giving us your thoughts, it tells the platform that this is good content and this is what we want to give out to you. So it's not a big ask. Make sure you do so down below. And if you're listening to this in your local podcast platform, please share, give us a rating, share this episode with other people that you think are doing the SDR gig and thinking about going to marketing. They don't know. We've got Mia's playbook right here for you to listen to. So make sure that you do that. But Mia, again, thank you so much. It's been a privilege and an absolute pleasure. I wish you a great week and most importantly, happy marketing.
Woohoo, happy marketing. Welcome to the light side, everybody who's going to switch. Welcome.